everybody. This is Corey with the Nerdy Times. With me always is Dan.
Hello.
Welcome back. We figured we'd get another one in before the end of the year. Hasn't been exactly regular, and we apologize for that.
It's our winter lull.
Yep. We take turns hibernating, and we're only up at certain times together.
That's right.
So.
Cuddling.
Yeah. No. Well, that's it for this week's edition of the Nerdy Times.
I know how to bring a podcast to a screeching halt.
Glad you guys could check in with us. We'll see you next
Happy
time.
Happy New Year.
That's right.
So, Corey, what movie did... Let's just start with the elephant in the room.
I don't want to start with that elephant.
Oh, yeah, you do.
No elephants in this room.
So what movie did we see tonight?
The Hobbit.
Ron Burgundy 2.
I wish.
So what did you think of this movie, Corey?
Do you want it? Sucked.
You need to keep it under five and a half hours.
Yeah, it sucked bad. I will admit, as with probably the last time when we talked about the first Hobbit movie, I have never read The Hobbit all the way through. I read about a chapter of it. I couldn't stand any of the characters in it, and I stopped reading it. Last year, when we got done watching it, I went and I found a Cliff Notes version online, and I started checking through what they did right and wrong in the movie, and they did plenty wrong, and some things right. And this movie is awful in every way it could possibly be. And there's a lot of people, as I've further reflected...
The last half hour.
I think that it was basically... The first one was a real disappointment, I think, for a lot of people. I think there were some people out there that were just wanting another Lord of the Rings movie, and that's kind of what they got, so they were happy with that. But I think for a lot of people, it definitely didn't live up to what they wanted it to be. And, you know, so this movie was much more action-packed than the last one. Mm-hmm. It had a lot more adventure to it. And... But it still wasn't any good.
You know,
it really is reminding me of the Star Wars prequel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
The Hobbit films aren't nearly as bad as the Star Wars prequels, but it's they're comparable as far as their failings.
Well, this is my problem with the movie, is that I'm not quite as down on it as you are, but it's a movie to nowhere.
Yep.
It's like... The last movie ended kind of weird, and I felt, you know, awkwardly. And this movie picked up kind of weird and awkwardly. And it took you through an adventure that didn't really matter till you get to the bad guy who doesn't really do anything. And it's just a big, giant tease for the next movie. I feel you could see the first Hobbit movie and the next Hobbit movie, the third one, and not see this middle one, and you probably wouldn't have missed a whole lot.
No. You probably would not miss anything.
It was just a way to suck another 12:50 out of you, and 3.5 hour or 2.5 hours of your life you will never get
That's
back.
That's right. It was just... I've used the metaphor already twice this evening before we started the podcast, but it was very much like standing in line at an amusement park for the big ride for 2.5 hours. And when you get there, they're like, you're done. And they just exit
you. It was the line ride.
Yeah. You're just in the line.
You know, I will say though, you didn't see the first Hobbit in 48 frames a second.
Nope.
This time we sort of I will say blundered into it.
Yeah.
But we went and saw it down at the local theater on the mega screen, which is 4.5 elephants tall, Corey.
Yeah, that's what they say. And 5 elephants wide.
Woo! All the elephants.
Yeah.
But, you know, we bought it because that was the show that happened to be starting when we got there. And, you know, we went in and it's like, and then it was very, they didn't advertise it 48 frames a second. Nope. I actually specifically hunted out the 48 frames a second the first time because I wanted to see.
Right.
Now, then this movie was in 48 frames a second. They didn't really advertise. They didn't advertise it at all. It was not. It just sort of happened to you. And I felt that in this movie, the 48 frames a second, they had a much better handle on the technique. Although there were some scenes, like, you know, Corey, you were saying that it very felt like Shots in the field, set.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you could definitely, like, some scenes, and I will say the place I noticed that the most was the barrel ride.
Yeah.
The barrel escape out of the woodland elved area.
Right.
You know, but other areas of the movie, I found they really had a good feel. Now, I will say the very first scenes of the movie were almost like last time on The Hobbit.
Right.
Or yeah. As The Hobbit turns.
Yeah, it was very jarringly 48 frames a second.
Yeah.
It was the first words out of Dan's mouth as the movie started. He goes, oh, we're going to get TV or something like that. Yeah. I was like, what? And then I looked up and I was like, oh, yep. This is 48 frames a second. Wow. That's interesting.
See, I feel this is one of those. Now, I could be wrong, but it's like I feel 48 frames a second is one of those things that is going to happen. Like more so than 3D.
No, I think
because I think what's going to happen is that people, you know, now that you have the TVs at home that, you know, that do 60 frames, we're used to TV being 60 frames. The only thing that was keeping films at 24 frames was the legacy technology. Projectors had
films
always
currently
been
are
set.
30 or 32 frames a second.
32. I thought they were 24. No. Isn't it three-one pull down?
I've repaired enough broken.
Where they
film.
Go 24 frames a second? Okay. I mean,
32 frames a second.
Okay.
But your eye only registers so much of it, and I don't know. I tell you the truth. The weird, unnatural smoothness to some of it. Was a little jarring. The real thing is, it's like, it makes your computer animated characters look a bit more real, but they still don't look real. There were a couple of guys in makeup in this movie. A few of the orcs were makeup, and a majority of the orcs were computer generated for whatever reason. But the computer generated ones stood out greatly as compared to the ones that were makeup. And I can't for the life of me tell what the difference is. You know, because you can look at the computer generated face and you're like, wow, that's really good work, but it's still computer generated. But then you got the guy in makeup and you're like, that's really good makeup. You know, but the one seems more real than the other. To me, it was like,
see,
every time...
I wasn't quite having that realization you were having.
Yeah, there were a couple of scenes where the orcs looked, the computer generated orcs looked almost photorealistic, and then there were other scenes where they seemed very much like a video game cinematic. There was a scene towards the end where Legolas is fighting this orc in the streets of Lake Town. And there is a scene where, like, they kind of circle each other, and as the orc basically covers, you know, blocks line of sight to Legolas, Legolas goes from being a real person to being an animated character. And Dan didn't happen to notice it, but I noticed it right away. Because his head looked like a balloon or something. It looked very odd. And I'm like, what is wrong with his head? Oh, he's computer generated now. And it was just kind of strange that they put that in there like that, and I don't know. All the action sequences, while fast and furious and violent and all that kind of stuff and over the top and exciting, is basically kind of the way Peter Jackson is kind of done it from Lord of the Rings and King Kong, and the way he kind of does his action.
Show me the fucking dragon.
Yeah. If you're really wanting just to see smog in this movie, go pick another two-hour movie that's starting around the same time. And when you get out of that movie, just walk right into the Lord of the Rings, stand there and watch the last 20 or 30 minutes of that movie, and you'll see all the smog you'll ever want to see. Smog was kind of neat looking.
That was cool.
There were some scenes in there where he definitely looked photoreal, like... And when I say photorealistic, I was like, I'm not sitting here going, there was a dragon. There was a real dragon. No, it was like...
He fit the scene.
Where you're watching, like, Jurassic Park, and the scenes where they had the electronic T-Rex are very, you know, it really looked like it was there.
Mm-hmm.
And there were brief moments in, like, this, some of the scenes in the Forge where Smaug kind of looked in that mm-hmm. same type of light, where he looked like a very well-made puppet that they were mm-hmm. maneuvering. And I don't know if that had to do with computer animation or the 48 frames a second or whatever, but that was...
The other thing you kind of learn in this movie is that hobbits and dwarves are made of asbestos.
Yes, they are fireproof.
Because it's like, I don't care what you're hiding behind. Like, because when Smaug lets go his flame, it is like napalm on the field of battle. It is like there's fire everywhere, and freaking Bilbo and the dwarves are hiding behind these little spires and whatever.
Yeah.
And the fire is flaming around them, and then the air is all hazy with the, and they're just standing there like, oh, we gotta stay here, we'll be safe. I'm like, no, you would be fried.
Yeah.
You'd be incinerated by the heat.
Yeah.
And I was like,
heat does not radiate. Okay. Heat does not radiate. You're only burned if you're in
if you're touched by the fire.
Or if you're touched by the fire.
That must be the special dragon fire.
Yeah, it's the magic dragon fire. It was weird.
Yeah, it was like, it's, you know, one of the things I really liked about the first Lord of the Rings movie, and one of my big complaints with the first Lord of the Rings book, is it took forever. Like, in the book, it took forever for anything to happen. Where in the movie, I'm like, oh, awesome, we're instead of it being a leisurely stroll out of the Shire, across the woods, visit Tom Bombadil, whatever, it's like, they ran out of the Shire, got to the first castle thing, had a battle, I'm like, awesome, good job. Well, they took all those scenes out of the three Lord of the Rings movies and shoved them into this movie.
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to watch hobbits and dwarves walk across the woods and walk across the plain and walk across here. And
yeah, it was...
like, oh my God, can nobody get a freaking cart?
You know, the action sequences, there were a couple of fun ones. There were a couple of them where they were just, I would guess, mm-hmm. I would call them standard.
Yeah.
And they're just like, whatever. And then there's this whole concocted story to make Bard some epic type of character. Very boring, very
Aragorn
dull.
Light.
Yeah, a little bit of Faramir sprinkled in there. And it's just, I was just like, I don't care about this character.
Mm-hmm.
Legolas and his lady friend, if they are indicative of what a wood elf is on average, there is no reason why the wood elves do not run the realm.
Yeah.
They, two of them, mm-hmm. take out orcs by the dozen. I mean, without even thinking. Mm-hmm. They're standing on one leg, on a barrel, floating through water, and firing arrows into people, and, you know, headshots, and decapitations, mm-hmm. and stabbing through the neck, and just, they are just slaughtering these people, you know, left and right. And it's... And and the real difference is, in this movie, it's different than he was in the other one. Like, there's a scene at the end of the Fellowship of the Ring where they're all being attacked by the riverside, mm-hmm. and, like, Bilbo's running away, and he's gonna go off on his own. But there's a scene where, like, all these orcs are running up, and Legolas is just drawing arrows and firing mm-hmm. them as fast as he can. And there's a real sense of panic, like, he has to get these arrows out. And while he's killing everybody mm-hmm. he shoots, it's a real, there's some energy to it, what he's doing. It seems very like, I have to do this, you know, mm-hmm. this is, my life is at stake. In this movie, he is a machine. He is just like, I stabbed this guy, I killed that guy, I shot this guy in the face, I did that. It was just like, there was no...
Sense of danger.
No, yeah, no sense of danger, no panic. He was, you know, everything was just going through the motions. I don't know.
Unless you are a diehard Lord of the Rings fan and you are frothing for more Middle Earth, you can probably just skip this and not watch it on DVD.
I think, guys,
to be quite honest,
when all three movies are out, I'm going to buy them used, and I'm going to put them in my computer and edit them all down into one watchable movie.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, watchable movie.
1 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
From 9.
I think I think 2.5 hours is going to be my target. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just going to take the book, and I'm just going to flip through the book and leaf through the book, and I'm just going to cut everything out that really doesn't matter. You know, Which there will be a everything. Shit ton. Yeah, there will be a shit ton of stuff on the
pretty much this whole movie.
Yeah.
There's probably about 10 minutes of this movie that'll make it.
Yeah, you know, you're gonna have the barrels.
Yeah.
I don't think anything in Lake Town is necessary.
No.
Getting to the mountain. That was another part. It was poorly edited.
Yeah.
It would have been much better. It's like they're looking for the secret door that leads into the Lonely Mountain, to the Dwarven Realm, and they're walking around this valley, walking around, and Bilbo's like,
"Oh yeah,
I see it!" And they're like, "You have magnificent eyes, my friend." And they pan over to this epically large Dwarven statue, and I'm like, yeah. "How the hell did you miss that?" You know, and they walk up, and then there's like this face of rock with this kind of somewhat of an archway you can kind of see, and I'm like. Okay, it would be much better if they'd have panned like to that, to that door, to that somewhat, and it's like, you know, not the giant statue.
Yes, we all see the statue, yeah. Bilbo.
Yeah, it's very good, Bilbo. Why don't you just keep, you know, here, eat your Limbus bread and go on with your business. I don't know. There is just so much to these movies that I cannot stand Thor and Oakenshield. He doesn't bother me. He is a without charisma.
That is a little bit true.
All of the other dwarves, in my opinion, like the white bearded dwarf, like he's kind of his right hand man kind of guy. That guy is way more charismatic. Mm-hmm. But Thorin Oakenshield, he just seems like, you know, an asshole. He's really no character that I care. You can kill him. Same goes for what they were trying to do with Bard. I don't care about Bard. I don't care that Legolas was in this movie, or the girl that they concocted to be this love triangle between him and a dwarf. All of that was just like, whatever. Smaug was kind of cool.
The scene with him and Bilbo was good. Yeah. Like, I kind of liked how Bilbo was playing to his vanity and... getting him, keep him talking and trying to find the thing.
And I don't know for certain because I've never read it.
Yeah.
But, like, I thought that Bilbo, from what I understood, kept the ring on and kind of snuck around the treasure chamber.
He did, but...
But Smaug could sense him that was there. And I get that. But I thought it would have been better if he'd have just... If it would have been me, I'd have never taken that thing
See,
off.
The way that I interpreted that, though, because Smaug is evil...
Right.
And Bilbo is fighting the effects of the evil in the ring. It was too much for him. It's like, because in the eye of Smaug, he was seeing the eye of Sauron.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, so it was just too much magic for him. And he kind of had to take it off to keep from getting, like, you know, infected with the evil.
I guess.
See, that was how I interpreted it. Because that seems like the only time he really has to take it off. Is when it becomes, like, too overwhelming for him. Because, you know, when he puts the ring on when he's fighting the spiders, he can suddenly understand the spiders.
Right.
So it's all the magic of the ring flowing through him.
I guess so. The funny thing about that ring is, like, if you watch the first movies, Bilbo's, you know, got it in the beginning.
Frodo, yeah.
And he's you know, obviously taken with it. And he puts it on at the party, and he gets home, and he flips it up in the air and catches it, like, ha ha ha, I did a good trick, and da 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 da, and he's running around. And then the minute Frodo gets it and puts it on, it's all dark and freaky, mysterious, and there's this giant burning eye that dominates the landscape, and he's, like, terrified while he's invisible. And I'm like, did Bilbo never happen to notice that when he's running around invisible? He's like, "Oh, it's my friend, the giant burning eye! Hi, friend! Woo-hoo-hoo!" What? You know, it's just like, you know, I don't know. Everybody has their own artistic interpretation of how things are done, and it's like, you know, I guess they were trying to make these films appeal easily to the mass audience, and they didn't want to actually have to worry about trying to figure out that, like, Bilbo was being felt like he's being watched. They didn't want him to have to act and you know, and have to make that a moment to be interpreted. They wanted it to be very glaringly obvious that the Eye of Sauron was watching whoever had his ring. But I don't know. It's like, if I had this thing and I put it on, and every time that I, you know, had this thing on so I could, you know, have, I don't know why I'd want to be invisible all the time, but I guess if I wanted to be alone or whatever,
yeah.
The last thing I'd want to do is have this giant burning eye hovering well, looming the other over way me that you and could whispering that, evil thoughts into my head.
Frodo never put on the ring until he started the event, started on the adventure.
Right, he was in the bar.
I think, Bilbo flash put on the ring, like, at his party when he left. So there was a couple of year period in there. So you could interpret that Sauron had gotten stronger. You know, because that was always my, even throughout the books and then the movies.
The thing is it's like they basically show Sauron you the eye stronger. Of Sauron in this movie.
Well,
and he saw the eye of Sauron in the eye of Smaug.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things where it's kind of like, all right, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's to me, he's doing way too much throwback.
Uh-huh.
He's just like, oh, see, we're Lord of the Ringsy. Mm-hmm. See, here's the eye.
And here's some characters you can relate to. Mm-hmm. Here's some characters from the previous movie,
yeah.
Which is really the future movie. Whatever, just watch this thing. Give us money. Yeah, I am not as impressed with these movies as I. You know, I was really afraid when they said they were. I was worried when they said they were going to split them. It was split into two,
mm-hmm.
And I was horrified when they said they were going to split it into three. And I'm like, these are small books.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand now you have to split everything up because that's what they did with whatever Harry Potter and the sparkly vampire movie, and they made all the money because they're doing the same thing
with Hunger Games.
Yeah,
basically
you make all the
money. Any successful book series, you can pretty much guarantee that each book is going to be one movie, and then the final book, no mm-hmm. matter what its length, is going to be two movies. They will find a way to stretch it out into two films. And it's like completely unnecessary.
And I guess this is my real problem is that they could have done this better. Like what they could have said is, okay, we're going to do three movies out of this. And we're going to scour Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. mythology and all these writings and all the Silmarillion and all this stuff. And we're going to like put in stuff that makes sense. We're going to expand out some of these characters and add more plot and do more stuff. And instead, it's like not enough butter on too much bread. You know, it's like they took the plot that was there and then spread it out over three movies. And I'm like, oh, goody. You know, and I think that's what annoys me the most is that there could have been the opportunity to do more, to flesh out more of Gandalf and to flesh out, you know.
To me, this movie it could have been a one film masterpiece.
Yeah.
It could have been 2.5-3 hours long and mm-hmm. been a masterpiece. He could have lovingly crafted each mm-hmm. scene in that movie to be accurate to the book and to be accurate to the characters and accurate to the story. It could have made it amazing.
Because you only would have made $500 million once.
Yeah.
Now you can make $500 million three times.
Yeah.
Which and everyone knows that more money is better.
Mm.
So these movies are better. Because they make more and more money.
I wish I would have stuck with my gut. I wish I would have convinced you to go see 47 Ronin. Or drug you to see Ron Burgundy. Because my after seeing the first Hobbit movie, I had no desire to see the second one. None. And I was like, you know, it came around and you're like, you know, it's a Hobbit. And I'm like, you know what? You know, one of my other friends said it wasn't so bad.
Yeah, we shouldn't trust any of our other friends.
Yeah. And so I watched it and I was like, oh, God, hang me. I was wanting to fall asleep through some of it. And
it wasn't that bad, but I couldn't really recommend it.
I can't recommend it either.
It was okay. And you know what I mean? It's like one of those things I don't feel like, okay, I have felt worse about other movies. King Kong is the pinnacle of, I can't stand that movie. Show me the goddamn monkey.
I rewatched that director's cut of Peter Jackson's King Kong. And I got to where they captured the monkey and they got back to New York. And I just stopped caring in that movie.
You took the DVD out of the player and flung it at the neighbor's house.
I just couldn't
hoping that it would never return.
You know, and the thing is, it's like, you know, he likes a lot of build-ups. Mm-hmm. Peter Jackson does. He likes to kind of build up. And it's funny. It's like, I was kind of okay. Like, you know. You're trying to get me to care about these characters that go uh-huh. on this adventure. So it's like, you're showing me Jack Black as the producer that, mm-hmm. you know, nobody wants his movies. And you're showing me this girl that just wants to act and she can't eat because she's broke. And, you know, this other guy is a writer who's being, you know, everybody wants and he's getting screwed left and right. And, you know, he gets, jerked along on this adventure. And there's all these things. You got all these little characters mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, okay. And so it's like, all right, you spend a little time with them, which is something nice. I mean, because mm-hmm. a lot of movies, you don't spend time with the characters. Yeah. It's like, oh, you're going to see King Kong? Here he comes. He's going to come in and he's going to start eating people and destroy people. And the characters are just usually kind of these...
window dressing to get to Kong.
It's like, oh, here's the...
or the Transformers
here's the plucky
whatever.
Heroine. Here's the wisecracking sidekick. You know, just one-note joke characters. And I like the fact that he at least made the effort to try and
mm-hmm.
give these characters some character, something mm-hmm. to do, so that you actually kind of cared.
So the problem is he forgot to do that.
He forgot to just cut to the chase on some of this mm-hmm. stuff. And then it's like one of his trademarks, and it's a trademark common to not only him, but many directors today, is that the tools, while fun to play with, there is a point to where mm-hmm. you just need to back off and stop and realize that that you don't need to go so far. It was like when he's in this, like in the King Kong movie, he's in the fight with like the three T-Rex monsters mm-hmm. and he's got the girl and she is being flung every mm-hmm. which way and caught and, you know, dropped and just barely managed. And I'm like, she would be so freaking whiplashed and or neck chicken whipped
broke.
Or neck broken or something, you know, but he manages to keep her through this whole thing and they're fighting through vines. It's just too over the top, and it's just like I stopped caring mm-hmm. at that point. I'm like, I don't care what's going on. And the same thing went for like Zack Snyder when he did Sucker Punch.
Mm-hmm.
Sucker Punch had a lot of really good visuals in it. I mean, but he had his action sequences that would go on for 10, 15 minutes at a time. And I was just like, I don't care. I don't care what is going on anymore. The first one, you're like, wow, that was filling, that action sequence. Mm-hmm. And 10 minutes later, you're in the middle of another one that's just as long. And you're like, oh, you know, and pretty soon you're just full on action mm-hmm. buffet. And it's like, and I'm an action movie guy. I like action. Mm-hmm. But make it, you know, make it more than just mindless. Make it more than just, and you know, and no matter how crazy your subject matter mm-hmm. is, try and at least give it a touch of reality or something, you know, a touch of believability, because I think that makes the sequence and everything a lot more fun. So,
have we beaten Smog to death now?
Yeah, a fucking movie can just go in the toilet, really. It's bad.
All right, so I'm gonna change the subject.
Go ahead.
Segue, if you will.
All right.
Doctor Who. So we haven't had a podcast since the 50th anniversary.
Right.
So what did you think of the 50th anniversary? If you can remember back that far, going the way back machine.
A little bit after
did
that.
We? No, I think we had our last podcast before it. Because remember, it was a big. We were on the big push to get it out before the 50th.
Yeah, I think with regards to that episode, I do feel like we talked about this. But anyway,
we're gonna do it again.
We're gonna do it again. The 50th anniversary episode was entertaining. However, I thought John Hurt's character as War Doctor mm-hmm. was not really all that different than any other Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting someone a little more dark, I won't say evil, but definitely someone a little less scrupulous
mm-hmm.
than the other doctors, and it was somebody that they were going to have to contend with, like, you know, this kind of this other side of themselves,
mm-hmm.
and it really wasn't. He was almost basically kind of mentoring them more than they were doing anything for him. But overall, the show was really kind of, I guess, light and fun,
mm-hmm.
and it had a lot of entertaining moments, and there was some couple of nice little serious moments, and they introduced a concept I'm not exactly sure if I'm overwhelmed with like him being able to go back and spoilers.
Yeah.
Being able to go back and revisit old regenerations.
Yeah.
It was something they kind of brought in at the end. They kind of surprised you with a little Tom Baker cameo, mm-hmm. kind of as the Doctor again.
Yeah.
So, but like they were sitting there talking, about like, you know, at some point he figures out how to go back and visit old, regenerations mm-hmm. or whatever. So, if anything, it's a plot device to bring in old doctors
mm-hmm.
as they are now,
mm-hmm.
it, you know, as actors, looking older and everything, but being the doctor still.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I think that was why the plot device was introduced.
Mm-hmm. So they could get cameos in.
Right, so now they have it out there in the ether so that it's like, you know, if they want to bring Peter Davison back, or the Colin Baker, or any of them. They want to bring any doctor back. It doesn't matter now that they're older,
mm-hmm.
because at some point in the future, the doctor goes back.
Could be them.
Yeah, could go back and revisit that part of himself through a regeneration and live a little longer. So, and, yeah, but overall I was entertained by it.
Yeah, I liked it. It hit a number of the fan service points. Mm-hmm. It opened up with the old original '60s Doctor Who theme.
Right.
You know, they had the school and the junkyard and
right.
You know, and then they reversed the polarity and did all the sort of stuff you come to expect over the years from Doctor, you know, right. Hitting some of the classic sayings and what. You know, what have you. Overall, I will say that I did like it. I think Tina enjoyed it very, very much, too.
Yeah. I'll tell you the truth. One of my favorite moments in it, and I've watched it a couple of times online and stuff, was the, kind of, I guess, the climax of the show where they mm-hmm. go to save Gallifrey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like all the doctors mm-hmm. are showing up in their TARDISes, and they're talking and everything, and they use different clips or whatever to kind of, you know, put everybody in yeah. there. And then there's just that moment where they bring in, like, the Peter Capaldi Doctor.
Oh, with the eye, yeah.
Yeah, and you just see his intense eyes or whatever. And you're like, you know, and it's just like, oh. And just that moment, I was just like, wow. You know, I hope that guy is as intense as that look was as the Doctor. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was kind of, it was a neat little moment to bring all the doctors together in one place.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So let's fast forward a little bit to the Christmas special,
which was just episode, a few days
which
ago.
Was just a few days ago.
We both watched it, and mm-hmm. I'd have to say that show, as a final show mm-hmm. for Matt Smith, was par for the course for him.
Yeah.
You know, when David Tennant went out, it was a big epic show.
Yeah.
And when he was getting ready to die and he went back and visited people and mm-hmm. everything, it was very, you know, kind of epic, the whole storyline was. Mm-hmm. So you're like, all right. And so when he gets to Matt Smith, it goes, because he's kind of been like the storybook doctor,
mm-hmm.
it was kind of a very storybook story, mm-hmm. you know. And everything is just kind of glossed over. He's not figuring anything out. He's not really doing yeah. anything. He was really kind of, in my opinion, a do-nothing doctor. Which, like I said, it's very par for the course. It very fits him. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, when he's basically regenerating in the TARDIS, it was, I liked his speech that he gave.
Mm-hmm.
His little exit speech, which I thought was cool. And his regeneration being so, like,
sudden, yeah.
And being Peter Capaldi in just an instant, I thought that was interesting, because when he comes out of that and he's looking at her,
yeah.
he has that wicked, mm-hmm. wild look in his face, and he looks very, I don't want to say creepy, but like psycho.
Yeah.
Like, you just get this look in his eyes, and it's just like, wow. And I just really hope they build on that. I don't know that how much I could stomach another goofy Matt Smith mm-hmm. doctor. I really, really hope that they don't do that.
I am, yes, I agree with everything you said, and I will say for the Christmas special, it was just okay. I thought it was a lot of much to do about nothing. It was just sort of what you needed to get to kind of move past Matt Smith and get to something new.
Right.
It was sort of, you know, I feel bad because in general, I don't hate the Matt Smith Doctor. I've liked a lot of the plot lines and some of the stuff, but it was like, I felt through the whole episode, I'm like, I know what my Christmas present's going to be. Stop teasing me. Come on, let's get to Peter Capaldi.
Right.
That's really why I'm watching this.
Yeah.
You know, and I will say, it's like, I have been ready for Peter Capaldi for like months now. Ever since they announced him, I'm like, yes, more him. Bring him.
Yeah.
And it's like, everything I read about it makes me want it even more, where Stephen Moffat's saying this is going to be a more intense Doctor. It's going to be, you know, a callback to the getting away from like the Storybrooke and the goofy Doctors, back to more of the Tom Baker, maybe Colin Baker type intense, you know.
Colin Baker was,
oh, he was more
borderline mean.
Yeah. Well, hey, but you know, but sort of getting back to that.
I'd even take that at this point.
Yeah.
Because there's something different.
And then,
I mean,
something I was kind of reading on Facebook, or not Facebook, but on Wikipedia, some of the different things I was reading about Peter Capaldi and being the Doctor, is that apparently Russell T. Davies wrote Doctor Who in the beginning of the new series.
Right.
And he had a plan for Peter Capaldi because he played the Roman, you know, nobleman. And then he was on Torchwood. He played a character on Torchwood. Apparently, that was not random occurrence. Like, there was a plan for that to all turn into something. And then Russell T. Davies stopped writing for the show, and those plot lines kind of got swept under the rug. Well, apparently, when Peter Capaldi was picked to be the next Doctor, some of that stuff is getting dusted off to, like, well, can we make all that work again? So there might be some sort of weird, you know, intricate Doctor Who story plot about why he was the Roman guy and why he was on Torchwood as someone different. And this could all be an interest. And I'm all ready for that again, because I felt the Matt Smith story plots had to be explained a lot. It's like they didn't develop in the show as much as they should have. It's like they had to, and particularly the ones at the end with Clara, it really annoyed me when they were like, they had to have the voiceover to explain everything. I'm like, it's like these things are supposed to like come out, like the whole bad wolf,
right?
You know, you're supposed to get little pieces, and it's supposed to, you know, it's not supposed to be so freaking confusing.
To build, right.
Yeah, where it's so freaking confusing, you're going, I don't know what happened, and they have to have a voiceover to explain it. It's like I don't want that anymore. I want these things to kind of build and be intricate, and I'm so ready for Peter Capaldi. I really, really hope he's good. I hope it doesn't suck.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I as much as I've complained here and there about Matt Smith, I enjoyed some of his stuff as the Doctor. But it's like, you know, out of everybody that I've seen as the Doctor, he was very much, you know, he was like the Doctor with amnesia or something. He was just, I don't know how to explain him. He was just kind of there. He was there to get everybody else to do everything. You know, letting somebody else be the hero. I thought that the perfect explanation for him was, like, I think it was during his second season where they had Amy do the narration before every show. Where, you know, he's the Doctor, and I, you know, I travel with him, blah, 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 blah. That was perfect, because they turned him into, like, they made her front and center, and they turned him into a secondary character. And that's exactly how the show felt.
Yeah.
Was the companion was always front and center, and the Doctor was always secondary.
And, you know, and what's kind of unfortunate about that is I like now that in this new series, that the companions have a stronger role. That the companions are no longer like, oh, Doctor, save us.
I do like the stronger companions. Yeah, but this guy was just, I challenge someone to go back through and watch every episode and just tick off the number of times where the companion saves the day and the Matt Smith Doctor doesn't.
The other thing that I'm kind of I'm hopeful for this is that we have ended the Time War saga, that Gallifrey has been saved in this pocket universe, that eventually one day it's going to show up again, blah 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 blah. But we have ended the broody, I have killed my people, sort of like you had to get through David Tennant. You had to get through, you know, Eccleston wasn't too bad. You know, he kind of had the emotional trauma thing going. But then David Tennant really kind of bothered me after a while, where it's like, oh, I've killed my people, I bring death everywhere I go. Then you have the Matt Smith, which is, he's the crazy goofy doctor, I guess, in complete, like, trying to get away from being the death doctor. Right. But I'm hoping that we have, like, closed that chapter on his life, where he is no longer the doctor that killed everyone. He's the doctor that saved everyone, and you can build the doctor again from there. That, like, because, spoiler alert, he has a whole new set of, like, regenerations.
Yep.
And I'm hoping that this lets them build the character anew. That, like, they can kind of start, almost like when they had Eccleston, like, start anew with, this is what these set of doctors are going to be about.
Right.
You know, and I it's like, I'm very excited for it. So I'm hoping, and the bad thing about this is going to be that apparently we're not going to get new Doctor Who's until September or October. You know, they apparently Stephen Moffat's writing for Sherlock, which is another hugely popular show now for the BBC. Mm-hmm. And the BBC doesn't want to spoil anything by pulling him off one of these shows or reducing his role.
The new season of Sherlock is done. It starts
See,
4 days.
That's why they had to delay everything, because now they're just starting the production of Doctor Who, and they said it takes nine months to complete the production run. So then you're into September.
Well, I'm okay with that.
I'd
like there to be some new stuff, but I'm okay.
But the other thing is that the benefit to this maybe is you'll get all the episodes at once.
Yeah.
Like, there won't be six episodes and then six episodes.
Right.
That they're going to get all released 12 episodes in a row, and you'll have a quote-unquote season. So, there's kind of ups and downs with that.
I want them to bring back Handles.
I know.
For those of you who have maybe not seen the Doctor Who Christmas special, the Doctor has this, it's not explained at all, but he has a Cyberman head that is badly damaged.
Well, he...
If
you pay close attention, he sort of half explains it, that he picked it up at a bazaar somewhere with the organics that had been removed. It's just the database.
Oh, yeah, my kid was kind of talking to me while I was watching it.
Well, I fell asleep halfway through it, so...
So anyway,
It was super exciting.
He was kind of using Handles to help him do stuff, like, and he was just carrying him around by the Cyberman handlebars. And I thought it was really kind of a little cool character, you know, just to...
Well, and Handles was starting to become like canine for a little bit. He kind of had the affirmative. And then at the end there, it was like, Wilson!
Yeah. I wish he wouldn't have died. It was just kind of... Or broke down.
Well, the one thing I will say, you mentioned about the Matt Smith things, is I very much like when we just come in on, like, the middle of stuff. Like once I realized that was how Matt Smith was going to work, I very much like the broken narrative stories.
Yeah.
Where you just sort of blunder into the middle of something, and then you got to figure it out.
Yeah. A lot of his stuff is very much that way. It's like, oh, I showed up, you know, and Rory and Amy are, like, separated, and it's like,
what happened?
What? And, you know, just weird stuff goes on like that. You just kind of walk into the middle of this story. But, I'm all kind of ready for something new.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing with Doctor Who, is that it's like, you know, you're really excited to see what the new one's going to be like. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get into their character for a while, and, then at some point or another, you start to wonder,
like, okay,
you know, what's the next one going to be like, and what are they going to do?
And now we can do it 13 more times.
That's right.
You know, that was one of a little rant I had on, like, our Facebook page, is, like, after it was announced that, like, technically Matt Smith was the last Doctor, like they had like this whole explanation of how he was really the 13th Doctor,
right?
And everyone's like, oh my God, how is the show going to continue? I'm like, what, like. Every science fiction show is built on rules. Doctor Who is the loosest with its rules out of any science fiction show ever. It's and I'm like the Doctor will have as many generations as needed, as long as the ratings stay up.
Mm-hmm.
And when the ratings go down, then suddenly he won't have any generations anymore. You know, it's like
he'll go on hiatus. Like,
you know, it's like I don't know why everyone was getting so bent out of shape. I enjoy a random useless fan and argument as much as anyone else, but at some point it's like he's gonna get them. You know, hell, it's like as cheesy as it sounds, the Time Lords just gave him more. Yeah. Like poof. Through the crack. Like that was the easiest way. Clara basically poured her heart out for him.
Well, see, yeah, I saw something else where it was just basically, I think it was during one of the David Tennant Doctors, it's like, they could continue regenerating past 12
mm-hmm.
if they wanted to, but it was like basically they, I don't know, kind of had like a code of honor type of deal where it's
yeah,
just like
they
decided that they would stop at 12.
It was very ill-defined.
Yeah.
Like they kept trying to like make it, to loosen it up, and people were treating this 12 regeneration, or 13 doctors as a hard and fast rule. And I'm like, no, the BBC is not going to go, well, you know what, that's the rule they made in the 60s, so, oh, no more Doctor Who, you're right. I'm like, it's like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's like every science fiction show kind of tramples over its own rules after a while.
Yeah.
Doctor Who does it all the freaking time.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the Christmas episode, like suddenly he knew who the Silents were.
Yep.
Like before, he had no idea who the Silents were. Now they're like, oh yeah, they're genetically engineered priests. I'm like, did he read a book in the intervening seasons?
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, that's who those guys are. I always wondered about that.
Yeah. And they were spies, and
yeah, I'm like going like, ugh. It's like it was sort of driving me a little crazy. I'm like, ugh. It's like See, it's even getting me all crazy now. It's like, oh. So well, I am excited. Corey's excited.
Yep.
We are all excited. So, is there anything else has happened this last month in
Christmas?
Oh, Christmas. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. We all spent a day at a game day at a local game shop.
That's right.
Had some fun there.
We had fun.
Great game if you're looking for a great party game.
Ugg Tech. You get to beat each other with blow up clubs.
Yeah. Definitely. It would be an amazing party game. And you could definitely see some
drinking game stuff, opportunities
yeah. with that. Definitely seek that one out. But yeah, we had a good time there. Christmas just was a few days ago, and
mm-hmm.
got all sorts of fun, interesting things.
Yeah, I got the Game of Thrones board game.
Oh yeah, how's that?
I don't know. I just opened the box and started reading the rule. Like Tina and I spent like an afternoon punching out all the little pieces. That was exciting.
I bet.
Yeah, and apparently there are expansions where you basically get little miniatures to go along with it. And you know how I love my little miniatures. Oh, yeah. So yeah, we're gonna have to give it a try. Brian said it was a pretty fun game. I don't know if you guys have played it before or not.
I think we did. I think we did play it with Brian, and
so he will probably be playing it a little more. And on a similar to from my girlfriend's mom got us Seafarers of Catan, so yeah. I know how much you are a Catan fanatic.
Oh yes.
So now I have another expansion for Catan that we could not play when you're around.
I got the game Chupacabra.
Yes, which was very fun. Game.
I think that it would almost be worth it to buy like another set so that mm-hmm. you have more dice and you could have more people play.
Mm-hmm.
Comes with 24 dice and basically everybody gets an equal set of dice. You all roll them at the same mm-hmm. time, and then you group your like animals together on the mm-hmm. dice that come up
create
little herds. And every set of eyes that you get, these little red eyes, that's the chupacabras. And the chupacabras can eat so many different numbers of animals. Mm-hmm. And if you have enough chupacabras, you can eat a herd. and you have to basically be able to take out a herd in order to attack it. And whenever you decide to take out somebody's herd, those dice become yours. You roll them the next time, and the person who has all the dice at the end wins.
It is very, very much like zombie dice.
There is a similar methodology. Yeah,
where in zombie dice you roll the dice and then you get points for the gunshots, and then you get 10 or whatever, you get 10 points, you win or whatever. It's a fun little game in a can.
Yeah, it is, and it takes all of 5 minutes to read the directions.
And it's like a half hour game. You can play it and whip it out and be done with it.
And then what's the Chupacabra?
Loco. Yeah, so if you get down to one dice and you roll a Chupacabra...
Well, anytime you roll all eyes,
mm-hmm.
nothing but Chupacabras,
mm-hmm.
you go Chupacabra Loco.
Okay.
And if you get Chupacabra Loco...
You can take out one of any
you can
any
take
herd,
out any herd that
no
you
matter
want,
how big it is.
No matter how big it is.
So that can kind of put you back in the game when you get when you get low.
So we had actually one person go Chupacabra Loco. Yeah, the less dice you have, the
better the chance.
Yeah.
You know?
So
do we get any other nerdy Christmas gifts?
We got a new computer.
You got a computer
in my house. Put it together. Built it from
an exciting adventure for you.
Yeah, it was a day. Because
remember, motherboard stand.
Yeah, motherboard
standoffs.
No part of the motherboard touches the case.
That's
one
right.
Piece
standoffs.
Touches, it's like yep.
Got to remember to put all the standoffs on.
Yep. So that was a little interesting adventure, but now it's all up and running, and it's nice, and I like it. Kids got more techno crap than any
That's
person
right.
should.
Hey,
so
he's in the modern generation.
Yep.
Generation whatever.
Yeah.
I don't even know what are they calling it now, because we were generation
tech is what they should call
it.
Yeah.
Is it still Y, or is
I
that
no
is that already? Because we were at, well, you're X. I'm sort of on the edge of X and Y.
Yeah.
And I guess or whatever. Yeah, I don't even know anymore. Generation Z.
Yeah, I don't know these guys. They're like the
we
I
don't.
The E generation.
You know, we don't have generations like named like they used to. Like the greatest generation.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the forgotten generation.
Well, they're not the baby boomers.
Yeah, we got tired of naming them, so now they're just X, Y, and Z. Whatever. Get out there, breed.
Oh, Lordy.
So do we have any, let's see here. So this will probably this will be our last podcast before the end of the year.
And unless we want a podcast on New Year's Eve while we're
drunk.
Doing whatever we're doing.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Let's see, we'll probably have at least one podcast in January. And then probably sometime in February we're going to realize, we haven't done very many podcasts. We need to get back on the podcasting bandwagon.
Yeah.
And then in March starts getting into the con season.
Yep.
So then we'll be at St. Louis Comic-Con, and we got all sorts of stuff coming up.
Yep, so it'll be an interesting new year. Lots of new movies coming out.
The website's done.
Website is done, and it's looking good.
Maybe my podcast resolution for the new year will be getting the Game Nights website back up and all those podcasts. Actually, the podcasts are already uploaded. There's just no way to get to get to them because there's no website connected to them.
Yeah, for those of you that were fans of us role-playing.
Yeah. Maybe one day that podcast will make a triumphant return. or a return. But there is some gold in there. That needs to be resurrected.
Yep.
Maybe this will be the year we tinker with video podcasts. Oh, which does remind me. Let's see, what do we got? Where are we up to? Oh, we're still good. We got at least six minutes.
Okay.
So I had a chance to we talk about Kickstarters throughout the year.
Right.
And I have received a number of them. You know, it's like I don't pledge to every Kickstarter that we talk about,
right?
But I pledge to more than I probably should. So I got a chance to we talked about, and I had pledged to the Settlers of Catan board, where if you are fans of Settlers of Catan, you know, you place out the tiles.
Right.
And the newer edition comes with a cardboard border that goes around it that snaps together kind of like puzzle right. pieces. Well, if you have an exuberant person at the table, whether they're young or old or drunk, you can move all the tiles around and stuff gets all kind of shifted and all that. So the Settlers of Catan board is a molded plastic board where the tiles and the roads all kind of set in. They don't really snap, but they set into place. Yeah. And it does a really good job. You know, we played with one of Tina's younger cousins, and the board stayed in place and didn't shift around. It was great. Although the one thing I did discover is that there are two editions of Settlers of Catan.
Right.
And I happen to have the pre-2007, which had tiles for the sea hexes,
mm-hmm.
where the post-2007 versions had the snap-in-place border with the harbors were pre-printed onto the surrounding piece.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me. And they gave you little tiles so you could change up the ports. Well, the Settlers of Catan board, the molded plastic board, used those little chits as the port pieces. So I had to order a quote-unquote adapter kit from Mayfair Games for like $7 or $8 so I could get the little chits to put in the board so everything was all nice and even. And even after I did that, there's part of me that wants to try to fashion little cardboard pieces to go into the slots you don't use so they're all kind of filled. I have weird OCD tendencies, apparently. So but it worked out really good. I want to say that cost me $35, so that might be like an expensive accessory if you're just the casual Settlers of Catan player. But if you play with any regularity, it's pretty awesome. And the board is very, very well put together, very well thought out. It breaks down into then the one I got was for the 5 to 6 player, so there's a middle piece that snaps in to expand the board. Hmm. Or the middle piece snaps out and the two end pieces snap together to create the 3 to 4 player board. And all the pieces kind of come, they snap apart into 3 pieces and they fit back into like a long, like, what do you think of it? Like a Milton Bradley box, game box kind of fit, you know, into a long, right. a long version of that. So it's, you know, it's not overly portable. It's not as portable as just having the game in the box, but it's still pretty easy to lug around. But now that I have Seafarers of Catan, I'm gonna have to look into getting the Seafarers board, because Seafarers of Catan use like predetermined board setups,
yeah,
and they can be different sizes and shapes, and there's some different things you get to expand it out for Seafarers of Catan. So I'm gonna have to look into that. But that was one of the things I got this year from my Kickstarter that turned out pretty spiffy. I think maybe after the first of the year that the one role-playing game I did, the one that was all the thematic one that was all based on like action movies,
right?
That has been finished, and I have a digital download for that. In fact, the dice arrived.
Oh,
so I'm very excited.
Cool,
because I got dice. So maybe we'll have to break that out and give it a try one night.
Yeah, we also did try Cards Against Humanity.
We did, and it was against humanity.
Yep, it was definitely that's an entertaining game. So, that's another recommended.
Yep.
One, I've heard that is the most requested game on Amazon right now.
Wow.
Cards Against Humanity. Basically just a very adult, vulgar version of apples to apples, so...
And actually, the more people you have, the better that game is.
Yep. But you can quickly go through the cards in the original pack, so an expansion might be in order.
Yeah.
So if you order the game, you might want to order an expansion or two and just keep it to the side,
mm-hmm.
and work those cards in once you kind of get through the basic set a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
Pixelated Bukkake is one of the trump cards in that game.
Yes.
Two midgets shitting in a bucket is another one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some, depending on your crowd, that is a...
If you have any problem with with crude humor, that is not the game for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, Anyway, I think that's pretty much all
we
got.
I think we managed to, in another 50 or another 20 seconds, we will have gotten to an hour.
Well, all right, then.
Go us.
Go us. Thanks for stopping by and listening to this week's podcast. If you need to find us online, head over to facebook.com / Nerdy Times.
Mm-hmm.
Go to nerdytimes.com.
Woo!
And you can find us on iTunes.
You can. And there's a button on the website.
You should
go and rate us and leave us a comment. And if you leave a comment and I happen to check it before the show, we will read your comment on the air.
That's right. Nobody's doing that. But
except Angry Pan Manda Man, which we super appreciate.
Yeah, we did appreciate that guy for whatever he said.
He liked us, Corey.
Yeah, he didn't.
Now I'm angry.
And you can also email us at info@nerdytimes.com.
Woo! It's been a month and you still remember.
I know.
Man.
If you guys are interested in hearing us or seeing us attempt to break the 52-hour world record
Corey
for the longest podcast. Dan has agreed to do that if we get enough fan support.
Uh-huh. No, so. Dan does not... The Guinness World Book people told us after 36 hours you could start to have hallucinations.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to do anything that, like, where the people that actually do it warn, you know, you could have hallucinations.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not super, super interested.
Come on, 53 hours. What is 53 hours amongst friends?
Uh-huh. I don't think I've ever done anything 53 hours. I can barely breathe for 53 hours in a row, okay?
Well, we'll just take turns.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
It's like, you know, it'll be you
and
I.
Have a feeling that will not be in the spirit of the rules.
No, you and I will be there. We'll talk for a while. Then when you get tired, you can go take a nap. We'll bring Joe in. Joe and I will do it. And we'll bring Brian on board and Tina.
So we're going to subject all of our friends to random hallucinations.
Yeah, and we just keep it going.
Ugh, I think you're a hallucination.
Why am I a hallucination?
I can't believe I'm sitting here. And it hasn't been 37 hours yet either.
Yeah, it's been one. I know, 51 to go.
I know. It's already seemed like 36.
We can go back to talking about Smog.
Oh,
I can go on a while about that movie.
All right. Everyone hope you had a happy 2013.
Yep.
Merry New Year.
And we'll see you in 2014.
Goodbye.
This is Dan and Corey saying have a great week.
Ending this thing.